Today is November 21st, 2018, and this is episode number 489 of the Apple Context Machine. Now, that's a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Brian Chaffin, an editor-in-chief of TMO, and to get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM, and if you would like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note over at facebook.com/groups/context machine. Now, today, my guest is Bob, Dr. Mac Levitis. May I call you Dr. Mac?
You can call me anything you want,
Too
Brian.
Bad. I'm going to call you Bob.
You can call me anything you want.
To those who may not.
You've called me worse.
I have. It's true. Anyway.
On stage, to in those, front of people.
To those who somehow don't know who you are the author of 1,578. Wait, is that right?
That's an exaggeration. But many? Only a little. 85, I think, or 86.
Good Lord. Seriously? 86?
Yeah. Well, 85? A lot of them are the same book. You know, like iPhone for Dummies.
Do you remember that time when I was up on stage and I said something about like how I didn't have the lyrics or something? And then Dave was like, dude, don't like tell people that.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Don't tell people that you just write the same book over and over again.
Why?
Because
I don't make any more money. I don't make any less money for saying it.
All right, fair
and
enough.
The truth is, you can go to the bookstore and see that there are 12 editions of iPhone for Dummies now. So I've written that 12 times.
It's true. And you have been kind enough to let me co-write some of those.
Yes, you got to do one of the iPad ones.
I did do one of the iPad ones.
And we may be doing it again next year.
Yay!
I hear a rumor that there will be an iPad book for 2019, but... You know what I said to my agent, Swifty?
Yeah.
Swifty of Encino.
Yeah.
I said, hey, Swifty, show me the money.
I think she's my agent, too.
She is your agent.
All right. So anyway, two of those books are Working Smarter for Mac Users, which I edited. I'm going to like crow about that.
You certainly did.
And I love that book, and I loved being a part of it. And another one of your most recent books would be iPhone for Dummies.
Yes. Yes, and Mojave for Dummies, which is like the 11th time I've written that book.
Yeah,
no, it goes back to System 6 for Dummies.
It's always cool, though, because you have to have that book written before it ships.
It's a challenge every year. Every year, it's like I cross my fingers and go, I hope they didn't add a new feature or change an interface element after the final, you know, after the Golden Master.
Yeah, but that's actually been pretty consistent.
I've been very lucky because sometimes I turn it in before I even see the Golden Master. Sometimes I'm done before the Golden Master even comes out.
Sure.
So I have to work from, you know, whatever, beta 9 or beta 11. But Apple has been pretty, consistent in that.
Yeah.
You know, mostly the betas, there haven't been a lot of surprises towards the end of the beta cycles.
And hats off to Wiley for being able to turn those books around. I mean, like people, I think a lot of people assume, I know a lot of people assume that Apple is working with Wiley or Apple is working with you and that you get early access to stuff and that, you know, that they're like.
I do.
Well,
no, I do.
You get.
Because I pay for it.
Yeah.
As a developer. That's right. I'm a developer of books.
Right. But they don't work with Wiley is a publisher, and they don't even work with you as an author, not technically.
They don't even tell us dates. It's like, you know, it would be nice to know when they're going to announce the next iPhone so that we can ship iPhone for Dummies in a timely fashion. And, you know, no.
Yeah, but
we guess right along with you right up until I get the invitation to the event I don't go to.
And that is working with Apple in a nutshell. Okay. We have at least two topics today.
Really?
Yeah.
What are they?
Well, the first one is going to be, this has been kind of a hot, we've talked about this in several different iterations with different configurations of people. I have never spoken to you about it. And so the topic is the iPad as a computer replacement.
Okay.
right? And what sparked this topic being for this show today with you and me is that you wanted to talk about specifically about the Bridge keyboard.
Yes.
But that, to me, that sort of like is, I mean, like I'm more interested in the broader, in like the, you know, the next level above looking down topic, which is again, is that the iPad is computer replacement.
Yes. So I'll give you my take on it.
Yeah.
Up until the Bridge keyboard, I considered my iPad a consumption device only.
Mm-hmm.
It was easier for me to talk into my iPhone if I needed to write or dictate or do anything that involved interactive communication. It's right. Like I used my iPad to read books and watch movies. It was great when I traveled because I could, you know, put a week's worth of entertainment on it
right.
And only weighed a half a pound. But I didn't do a lot of, quote, work. Now, my main computer is a MacBook Pro on my desk. And when I travel, I take it with me, and, you know, that means most of my stuff is with me already on that computer, and it's a pretty good computer for using when I'm, you know, mobile. The second thing is, I could write on the MacBook Pro, the MacBook Air. I have a MacBook Air also, which made it so that if I was going to run out the door and write on something and didn't want to disconnect the MacBook Pro from the dock and the monitor and everything else, I would take the MacBook Air. And that would serve as, you know, I could run anything I needed on it. I can even edit video on it if I have to. So then I got this Bridge keyboard, and all of a sudden I can type relatively fast on an iPad, which opened a whole, you know, a whole slew of things that I didn't used to do on an iPad that I do now.
Okay, well, let me interrupt right there. Right there. Because when I start thinking about writing, obviously a keyboard, a physical keyboard.
Okay,
I have a tangent. Can I take you on a tangent?
Let's go on a tangent.
Do you remember, and I mention this all the time, I cannot let go of this. I mean, honestly, I just can't let go of it. Do you remember that BlackBerry commercial with the douche bro who says that the BlackBerry is better than an iPhone because it has a physical keyboard, because that's important? Do you remember that guy?
No, but I share the sentiment.
Well, I don't share the sentiment for an iPhone, for a smartphone.
No, not for an iPhone.
For this, but iPad. He was talking about smartphones, and
oh yeah,
and
he's like, wrong.
And this is like, yeah, I well, know. Look, I know this
is BlackBerry still in business?
Yeah, but I can't. Okay,
and anyway, wait, isn't Apple the most highly valued company on earth?
But
so who was right?
BlackBerry was wrong. They made the wrong bet. And that actor that they hired, it's, you know, it's unfair of me to assume that character represents the actor, but I cannot. Anyway, that's not the point. The point is that with tablets, with long form writing, a physical keyboard is important. Those little tiny chiclet keyboards with your thumbs on a smartphone, that was ridiculous. But with a tablet, a physical keyboard is better. But the problem is that when I start thinking about long-form writing, and you do long-form writing, obviously, you write books.
And columns.
The mouse or some kind of pointing device other than your finger, to me, is still an issue. So what do you think
of that? It's more than that, though. It's the multitasking. See, the thing is, the way I work, I've got 11 apps open at any given moment, and I might bounce between three or four of them to get something done. I may be, you know, in Safari, then checking an email to see what I'm supposed to do, then in Word to write, and then in Messages to see the message that someone sent me about the thing I'm writing. And on the iPad, while it's not that hard to switch apps, it's hard to have them all visible at once.
And well, okay, me, yeah, but a lot of that, people only operate in full screen on their computers.
That's fine. So, those people probably can adapt to using an iPad as their computer better than me.
That's an interesting point, Bob. That's a very interesting point. People that go full screen are probably going to be more at home using an iPad as a computer replacement.
Absolutely. And, you know, the thing is, there are places where I could see doing what I do on the iPad if I had a mouse. And I could multitask it, and I could have windows, you know, and I could move things and place them spatially the way I want them so that the browser's on the right and the writing's on the left and the palettes are on the other screen. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, I've been using a Mac for, I don't know, almost, I guess, 94, 04, over 30 years. Yeah, and get, so
you got, let's make that point. You got your first Mac what year?
1985. So I've been developing my habits for 30 years, and they're finally honed. And part of what I can't get over when I use the iPad is I like to have three or four or five apps all visible while I'm doing things, especially writing.
And now, okay, I edited Working Smarter for Macs.
Mm-hmm.
I
don't multitask, by the way. I think multitasking for a person is a misnomer. People can't do that. You have to focus on one thing at a time. However, when I'm writing, I'm always looking at reference stuff. How many words do I have to write? Was there an assignment? Is there a specific thing I'm supposed to hit on?
That was the point I wanted to make, Bob, is that you, when you talk about having all these apps open, it's not because you just left them open. It's a very focused thing where you've chosen the apps that are open that you need to get your job done.
And I use hide and show a lot so that what's on my screen at any given moment is only the things that I need to do what I'm doing right now.
And application switching with Command Tab on a Mac is way faster than application switching on an iPad, let alone the idea that they're not both really running at the same time where you can see them both.
Well, yeah, the thing about the iPad is you can't really get to the fifth app over without going through four other apps.
Right.
You know, and so for me, if I've got my hand on the mouse, then clicking a window is much faster and doesn't make the other thing go away, which to me is important. So I don't know, you know, here's the thing. I could edit a video or I could write a column or do something. See, editing a video or actually creating music on the iPad is a lot easier for me than writing. Because for me, writing requires more than just a blank page in front of me. Almost always, I've got facts that I need to check and images I need to look at to integrate into the work. And, you know, I'm doing a lot of different things when I write. Whereas if I could just open Logic Pro on my iPad, which I can't because there isn't one, but if I could, that's all I'd need. You know, I could spend the day making music with just Logic Pro. Mm. Whereas I can't spend the day writing with just Word or Pages. I really need a browser, and I need my notes, which are probably in Ulysses. And by the way, I love Ulysses for when I need to write when I'm not in the office, because I write in there first drafts and stuff and just leave them hanging. And if I find myself with time when I'm out and about, I can add to them on my iPad or my MacBook Air. I never used to do that. I used to, you know, write notes to myself on paper and come back and integrate it when I got back to the office. But I found Ulysses very, you know, reliable for just basically first drafts of everything.
I like Scrivener on iPad. But I'm a Scrivener nice. Nut.
Then you're writing novels. See, if I was writing a novel, I think I would probably want to write it in Scrivener. But for the things that I'm doing, the long form stuff I do has to be in Word. I don't have a choice. I've written about it many times. I don't have an option. I wish I did, because Word's my about fourth favorite word processor, fifth maybe. but
the publishing industry runs on it.
That's exactly right.
You know, I mean, for me, it starts off in Scrivener. It lives in Scrivener. I edit, I create, I do everything in Scrivener. But then eventually,
and then you output it to Word. But see, that doesn't work for big time publishing. It works for your first draft, but once you get done,
it's
got to be in Word the rest of the way.
Yeah. Well, actually, on the fiction side, once an agent has it, it lives in Word. From then on.
That's right. Once you've submitted it, you can't put it back into Scrivener, sad because you spent all that time and all your notes and everything else is there.
That's okay. It's worth it. Totally worth it. All right, so let me ask you another thing, because this is to me this is a really big aspect of writing.
Mining a rich vein, are we?
Yes, we are. That's the insertion point. So when you're writing on a computer with a keyboard and mouse, you've got a combination of your arrow keys and your mouse or your trackpad or your scroll ball, whatever you're using. Scroll ball? What do you call those
things? Scroll. I call it the scroll thing.
What's the ball called?
Well, it's called a scroll pea.
No, it's not. What's it called?
A scroll ball.
It's not called a scroll ball. What do you call those?
It's called a scroll wheel.
No, the scroll wheel is the thing that's on your mouse that you scroll with.
Do you clean your mouse balls?
you were not helping, Bob.
That was a famous IBM tech note.
Scroll. What do you call those?
Scroll ball.
No, it's a trackball. Scroll. It's a trackball.
A big one.
Yeah.
The one that's on top of your mouse is a scroll ball.
Yeah. Very few mice, like they're all lasers now.
Only Apple. Apple mice have the little P on the top. No, they don't anymore. Now they're just touch sensitive. The old ones.
Okay, we're so like this is.
I don't use Apple mice. I use only. What do you call it? Logitech mice. And at that, I only use the $100 Logitech mice.
Yeah, the MX Master.
You betcha.
The 2S. Have you used the 2S, by the way? That's the new one?
I have not yet.
It fixes.
Only because I have two of the Masters that are fine, and I have the dongle in my backpack so that I don't forget it when I travel.
My original MX Master had the problem where the mechanism for switching between ratcheting mode and free-flowing mode on the scroll wheel would get stuck.
Oh.
And it would.
Mine doesn't do that.
That was a common problem. They fixed that with the 2S.
But when this one breaks, I'll get a 2S.
Yeah, the 2S.
I just have no reason to upgrade. You know, somebody asked me the other day if they should upgrade something. I said, is it working? Yes. Are you unhappy with the way it works? No. Well, then don't fix it if it ain't broke.
That's great advice. So back to my insertion point.
Yes.
When writing, a big part of writing and probably a significant part of why I prefer writing on a computer is controlling the cursor. And that's with a combination of the arrow keys and the mouse, your pointing device. So my question to you is, when you're writing with the Bridge keyboard,
yes, I use arrow keys all the time, and they work the same as they do on the Mac, so I can press Shift and Select. No, I mostly, when I'm typing, I will mostly, unless I have to move far, I mostly use the arrow keys because I can Command Arrow to go by paragraph. I can Option Arrow to select by word with the Shift key down. It works, I don't even have to memorize new shortcuts. They're the same. So when I'm editing, it's pretty much the same. Sometimes I have to use my finger if I'm moving farther than one page full. Mm. But other than that, if I'm on, if I'm just selecting something that's on screen, I use the arrow keys and the shift key and the option or command to select either lines or words. But that's how I work on the Mac too. So when I got the Bridge keyboard and I saw that there were arrow keys and they're in the right place, I was very pleased.
Okay,
and it really works for me. I mean, I can like go to Starbucks with the iPad and answer a whole day's worth of email without getting frustrated. I couldn't do that before. And I tried it with Apple's keyboard. You know, with the what's it called? The magic,
keyboard.
The smart keyboard. Yeah, but those keys don't move. They're like, it's like typing on glass with bumps.
A fair point. Yeah, I would get the Bridge keyboard.
Oh, the Bridge keyboard rocks.
You're not the only person who's endorsed it. I'm going to ask this in a way that I haven't heard anyone address or look at it this way. So, you know, okay. Apple talks about the iPad Pro being a keyboard replacement. And you...
A Mac replacement, you mean?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Thank you. I'm sorry. I was off mic.
Yeah, you were. But I was off words. So, okay. You know, whatever. Mike, like, what percentage of the way do you think we are today towards having the iPad Pro being a Mac replacement?
Well, see, here's the thing. I think I'm unique because of my insistence on multi-windowed, multitasking environment. Mm-hmm. So I don't think the iPad will ever be a computer replacement for me. For somebody that sits in one app all day, Photoshop or Final Cut Pro or, you know, whatever it is, if you're an artist or a musician and you're using your iPad instead of a Mac as the recording or whatever you call it device, yeah, I think they can. I think that there's going to, you know, it's funny. My kids don't have computers anymore. They had, but when they like died, they said, you know, I don't really need a computer. I do everything on my phone. And they've gotten iPads to make the stuff they do on their phone a little bigger and easier. But basically, they're willing to live without a computer to not have to have three devices in their life.
If you want to know, if you want to understand why it is that Apple doesn't seem to give a crap about the Mac anymore, Bob's story is why.
Yeah, that's it. My kids. And I think it's really all millennials and younger people really have less and less need for a computer and are more and more comfortable doing things that, you know, I find awkward on a tablet.
But what if I need them to get off my lawn? Just mocking myself, Bob. Just mocking myself.
You're so funny, Brian. Yeah,
I suppose I am. All right. So put a percentage on you then. I hear you saying that you may not be representative.
Two things. One, if they enabled mouse support on the tablet. Because, you know, when I travel, I take a mouse with me because I'm not a trackpad guy. I've never been able to adapt. Look, if in a pinch I can use the trackpad and I'm perfectly happy, but if I'm at a table and I've got room, I'd much rather have my MX Master in my right hand. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, if they'd enable that for the iPad, which wouldn't, it's got to be trivial, right? I mean, it's already a Bluetooth device. It can talk to the iPad. All they have to do is wire it up so it works. Or a wired mouse, even. I'd be okay with that. But part of it is, for me to be really productive, I need to be more accurate than my finger.
Yep.
My finger doesn't have enough DPI. Now, the Apple Pencil goes a certain way, but I've already lost two of them. And, you know, it's just not the kind of thing that is always right there when I need it. So that wasn't a solution. I don't know.
So put a percentage on it today, right, with what they have today.
Today, with what they have today,
for you.
98% not using it as a replacement for a computer.
2% of the way there?
For me? Oh, okay. What percent of the way there? I'm saying, okay. Let's say it's at half right now, but I don't think it can do the other half without some big changes.
Well, okay, hence half.
And the thing is, if I'm like running out the door and I don't feel like disconnecting the MacBook Pro and taking it with me, which usually is too much trouble. If I'm leaving for more than a day, I'll take the MacBook Pro. If I'm running out to go work somewhere else, I'd rather take something lighter weight. So the MacBook Air or the iPad. And it's always been the MacBook Air until the Bridge keyboard. The Bridge keyboard kind of leveled the playing field and made it so that I don't mind running out and doing light work on the iPad, which I never did before. You know, before that, I only took it with me if I needed to read something or watch a movie.
Fair enough. All right, that is very interesting to me, and the most pertinent kind of, like, you know, in that it's all about me. This conversation about this particular topic is the most that has related to really how I work too. So,
our second topic is going to make you have another reason to love your iPad, even if it's not a Mac replacement.
Okay, Bob, what is that second topic?
I don't know. What is it? No, I know what it is. And it's the topic of my column this week, as it turns out.
Oh, imagine that.
And that is, why two monitors are better than one.
But on your Mac.
On your Mac. Right. Yes. Now, so I've had two monitors on my Mac since the Mac 2 came out. Do you remember the Mac 2?
Yes.
All right. It spawned the FX, which stood for too frickin' expensive. And they were the first Macs that easily accepted second displays, right?
Okay.
Before that, you could buy a second display, but it had to be like hardwired into a plastic case. They had to drill holes for the cables, and it was ugly. Radius. Anybody remember Radius?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So I've been using two monitors since it's been possible in probably in the early 90s or the late 80s. And I've always had two displays on my desktop because nobody makes a big enough monitor. Well, I need like 500,000 pixels across. No, I need like
this kind of plays 5, into your ADHD too, right? You're able to better compartmentalize.
Well, part of it is I don't like to hide stuff behind other stuff if I'm using it. You know, that annoys me to not be able to see it when I need it, to have to do something to be able to see it. And so two displays means I can put stuff all around about a 5,000 pixel wide desktop, and they're where I expect them to be, and they don't move. And, you know, unless sure. I block them with something else, I can see them. And so with two screens, I can, you know, have lots of stuff on the screen and not have a lot of stuff blocked so I don't see it. So it makes it real easy to move from one thing to the other, especially when you're like working on a graphic that's going into an article. You can go back and see what the words that you used to describe it were. Then you can write the caption. You need to look at the image. You might need to crop it or change it. All of these things are easier to me when, you know, I don't have to think about what app is that? How many clicks do I need to switch to that app? And then can I still see what I'm doing here when I do that? No. So I don't know. For me, I don't think I'm ever going to get to a point where I prefer or I don't need a Mac. I mean, the whole idea of a keyboard, a mouse, and two monitors works for me. So now the two monitor thing has been a bugaboo when I leave, if I'm not in the office. If I'm in the office, yeah, I got two displays. I got the MacBook Pro's Retina display built in, and I've got a 27-inch monoprice. And it's great. But when I leave, what do? That 15-inch monitor on the MacBook Pro is too small. I just can't live with that. I've had to pretty much my whole life, but for 10 years or 15 years, I've been looking for the solution to having two monitors outside of my office when I travel. I actually bought something. I bought USB monitors. I bought a couple of them. They were like, you know, 4 pounds. And it was a USB monitor that you just plugged into your Mac and you could go to a hotel and you'd have a second monitor. But they were 4 or 5 pounds more than my MacBook Pro. And they weren't very good. They just never really, I don't know, felt right. And they were too heavy. So I was a real big fan of Duet Display. Are you familiar with it?
I am.
$10 software that turns your iPad into a second display for your Mac, and that's very nice. And I've been using it for 2 years since I got it. And in fact, when I got it, it was $20. Now it's only $10. And it's worth it if all you need to do is put some things like palettes or windows on your iPad and use it as a Mac display. The downside is, A, it needs to be wired to work well. So you need to connect it to your iPad with a lightning cable, you know, a charging cable. And that's not the biggest one. The biggest one is it's not great at doing stuff like playing video or gaming or anything that's, why? You know.
Latency?
Yeah, it's not just latency. I don't think that it's
refresh rates.
It's emulating a monitor. It's not a hardware monitor, so right. it's faking it. And I think it's a combination of all of the drawbacks of emulating a display rather than having a hardware display attached. So anyway, this company that makes what's their other thing called? Well, anyway, the thing that I've got is a little hardware dongle that goes in your mini display port on your Mac, and it convinces your Mac that your iPad is a physical...
Wait a minute. What if your Mac doesn't have a mini display port?
Well, then you can order the one that fits in the USB-C port.
Oh, okay. That makes
sense. So it's one or the other.
Right.
All right. But once you plug this dongle in, it convinces your Mac that it's connected physically to another Retina monitor. And after that, you can use that monitor as if it were a second display on your Mac wirelessly up to about 40 feet. So your Mac could be in the office. I can go lay on the couch and still work on my Mac on the iPad screen. Pretty cool. Also, I can use it as a second screen. So I edited some video. I was flying to Philadelphia last week, and I had to finish the video I just told you about, the one about why you have to back up, which is going to be a cool stuff found soon. So I'm on the airplane, and I'm thinking, do I want to edit video? I don't know. It's so hard to edit video on the 15-inch screen alone. But nobody was sitting next to me. So I put down the tray table next to me. I brought out the iPad. And so here's the thing. It doesn't work right on public Wi-Fi. It works great in my office and my house. Mm-hmm. But when I go to, like, Starbucks, it doesn't work with their Wi-Fi.
Sure.
But my iPhone has a hotspot.
Sure.
And all it cares about is that there's a viable Wi-Fi connection that's not going to shut it down. So I use my phone as the hotspot, and I edited video on the airplane with two screens. I had my playback on the iPad screen and all my bins and timeline on the Mac screen, headphones on. And I in the three-hour flight, I managed to finish a 90-second video. You know, I did all the editing really in the air with two screens. It was so cool.
That's great.
And now, people kept walking up the aisle going, whoa, is that iPad connected to that Mac? Because they were separated by about 2 feet and no cable. So at least three people looked at it and went, whoa.
I, Bob, I am compelled to point out that you saying it's hard to edit video on a 15-inch MacBook Pro is a little bit of a first world problem.
It is absolutely a first world problem.
But you found a first world solution, so yay!
For only $79. And you know, the thing is, there's two great things about it. Number one, when I'm sitting in the hotel room, I'm not hitting myself in the head going, gee, I wish I had a second screen. I would edit video now, or I would record a song now, or I would do something now that I wouldn't do on one 15-inch screen. I know, first world problems. But this Luna display lets me, you know, I can mirror my Mac screen and go on the couch and edit a picture, for example. I can crop it. I can save it to another folder. I can mail it to somebody, all from, you know, laying on the couch, even though the file is on my Mac in the office, which is pretty cool. And the pencil works. So, you know, for graphics, I don't do that much real image editing. But if you did... It's pretty nice to have a pressure-sensitive pencil tablet. Oh, I know what their other thing is. They make something called AstroPad, which lets you use a iPad Pro as a basically a Cintiq, you know, the drawing tablet with a screen in it. So yeah. You draw right on. So it turns your iPad into that for like $20. No hardware.
Wait, for a Mac?
Yeah. So
yeah,
you can have like Photoshop open on your Mac, and then look on your iPad screen, use the pencil, and you know basically use the iPad screen as a not just a pressure sensitive touchpad, but also a screen, so you can you know interact with your artwork in real time,
right?
Or suit maybe kind of real time. I don't know. I've never used it.
Yeah, I haven't used it either.
Because I can't draw a straight line. All right. I have an Apple Pencil, but it's like, I wish I knew how to draw stuff.
So you just gave us two solutions, one software only and relatively inexpensive. And
$10.
The other is software and hardware.
Yes.
That is
$79.
Eight times more than the other one.
Yes. However, for eight times more, it's like having a second display for your MacBook Pro. And actually, you can use it with any Mac.
So is the other one.
Yeah, except that you can't watch video on it, and you can't really use it for gaming, and you can't use it for anything
that's
really...
How many people game with two displays?
Well, that's the thing. If you want to watch video while you're using it as a second display, it wasn't perfect. Oh, and also, because the Luna display is emulating real hardware in hardware, it has all the resolution options that a Mac display would have. Whereas Duet is kind of limited to, I think, one or two different resolutions, and okay. That's it. You can't get to Retina if you need it. Not that I need it that often, but you can't.
I happen to know you have a hard out in 2 minutes. So here's my question.
I do.
Here's my question to you.
Yes, sir.
To bring this particular conversation to a close.
Okay.
You just gave us two solutions. One's $10 in software. One's $80 in software and hardware and performs better. You clearly prefer the hardware and software option. Yes. My question is, who will be completely satisfied with the software only solution, and who needs the hardware
who's not, okay, anybody who's not, well, first of all, if you want to go more than 8 feet from your Mac and use the screen, you don't have a choice. It's hardware and software only.
Who does that?
I don't know, but I liked laying on the couch and being able to edit a photo that I was working on my Mac when I walked away.
Okay, all right, fair enough. I'll accept that.
That was kind of fun.
Who's going to be satisfied with the software-only solution?
I think anybody that wants to just have some windows on a second display, artists maybe that want to put the palettes on or the artwork on one display and the palettes on another. I suspect just about anybody that's comfortable using two displays at home would be well served to try the $10 software only solution first, and then if it doesn't do the trick, consider upgrading to the $80 hardware and software. You know, the fact that it's wireless and it's up to 50 feet or 40 feet or whatever its range is a big deal to me. In the hotel, it's really great because it means that if I'm doing something on the Mac, I can turn on mirror mode and walk probably to the ice machine and back without, you know, stopping work. I know that's obsessive. But I also travel with a speaker. I can't stand listening to movies through the
I can't believe TV you speaker. Just said the other thing, though. Okay, so I'm going to take your heart out as an opportunity to leave everybody with that completely ridiculous image of you.
What, me walking down the hall with my iPad, yes. editing a video in yes. my hotel yes. room on my Mac?
Yes.
See, but that to me is cool. I would think that was cool if I did it.
Okay, sure.
And as I said, I didn't actually do it. I just could.
Let's go with that. Let's go with that. All right. So here's what. Hey, man, thank you for being here today.
Hey, thanks for having me as a guest host. Have me anytime. This is fun.
Yeah,
I don't want my own podcast. I just like being a guest on yours.
Yeah, this is. I'm super happy. This is good stuff. So here's what we do when we get to this point. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com or join us at facebook.com/groups/Context Machine. Our content is written by the good people, the amazing staff at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for TMO. And that is all for this week. We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.